Winston, H&A PAC meeting, May 11, 2022.
You're on.
I'm on.
Ms. Chairman.
Today is May 11, 2022. PAC meeting for the Winston Housing Authority Needs Analysis. Roll call, starting with you, sir.
Alan Hobson's here.
Renee Morgan.
Rex Stevens.
And vacant members, Mike DeRussia, Rob Price, and Steven Johnson.
Okay, I'm going to just turn it over to Mr. House there and let you take it away, sir.
Thank you very much. Good evening, everyone. Steve Faust with 3J Consulting. With me running the show back here is Tim Wood with FCS Group. Excuse me. Go to the next slide, Tim. So we're going to talk about the housing needs analysis, or where we are in the process this evening. We're going to do just a quick review of what we talked about last time, just a few slides, because we knew we'd have some members, or we were hoping we'd have some members of the public this evening. So we'll cover just some of that. Then we will walk through the buildable lands inventory again. And kind of the highlight of tonight, in addition to that, is the reconciliation of residential supply and demand. So do you have a surplus? Do you have a deficit? And what that number is. And we'll talk briefly about next steps. After discussion with all of you, I think the plan was to close the Planning Commission portion of the meeting and then open it up to public comments, and we can walk over to the boards, or we can just sit where we're at, whatever works for all of you. Okay. Actually, Tim, we're going to switch places real quick.
Okay. Actually, yeah.
No, I think this is just
okay. This is over.
Sorry, we're like doing a do-si-do here. So, to recap, the housing needs analysis overview is a requirement of Goal 10 of the Oregon Land Use Planning Program. The final housing needs analysis will include a housing needs projection, which we talked about last time, the buildable lands inventory. So the housing needs projection gets us to our demand for housing. The buildable lands inventory tells us what our supply of land is for that needed housing. We then reconcile the two and determine if there is a surplus or a deficit, and that's what we're talking about tonight. And then a next step for the city will be, based on the results of the housing needs analysis, to develop policies. If you think you need to update policies to go into your comprehensive plan related to housing. I should say, I kind of skipped over the fact that what we're talking about is a 20-year supply of housing. The state requires all jurisdictions, or I think all jurisdictions, to maintain a 20-year supply of land to accommodate their housing needs. So we've identified the housing needs, we've identified the supply for land, we see if there's a surplus or a deficit. If there's a surplus, city doesn't have to do anything. If there's a deficit, first you have to look internally inside the city's urban growth boundary to see if there are things, measures you can take to accommodate that needed housing. And then if that can't make up that deficit, then you look to urban growth boundary expansion. Next slide. So in terms of our schedule, we had our first meeting with you all virtually in March. To talk about the housing needs projection. Here we are in May to talk about the buildable lands inventory, and like I mentioned, that residential land needs analysis. We have one more round of meetings with you all in the July-August timeframe, and then we move into adoption in the early fall. And we'll be making sure, kind of revisiting our schedule to make sure it all lines up. Next slide, I think this is where you come in, Tim.
Sure is. Okay, so briefly I'm just going to review with you all the results of the housing needs projection we talked about the last meeting. So Winston is growing, obviously, looking to add 1,750 new residents in the next 20 years. So that's the growth that we have to plan for and ensure that there is adequate land to accommodate that new population. And in general, household demand, household size is shrinking, so that means that overall the demand for housing units as population increases is also increasing just due to that demographic shift. So next slide. On that prior slide of the overview of the housing needs analysis, it's stated that the state is looking more to address the issue of severe rent burden, and that's a condition where households are spending 50% or more of their income on rent. So this is purely among rental households. You can see here that in Winston, 24% of renter households are spending more than 50% of their annual income on rent, which I know is a lot of percentages, but that's a quarter of the renters in the city are spending a significant amount of their money on rent. You know, this is from 2019, so, you know, obviously as inflation continues to rise, this condition will probably worsen a little bit in the short term. Next slide. And that's not a surprising outcome. As you can see here, housing costs have increased at an average annual rate over the last 2 years of 16.3%, moving from $204,000 for the median value of a home in Winston to $276,000, which is obviously great news for homeowners, but makes it difficult for first-time home buyers and for renters as well, because it's indicative of the cost of residential property in general. So $72,000 increase over the last 2 years is pretty significant. And you can see here that similar markets kind of in the same area are experiencing the exact same condition, so it's not exclusive to Winston. So there's not a lot of escaping it. You can see that there's a good range between Winston and these cities as well. So pretty interesting. Next slide. And then finally, what we discussed at the last meeting was the projected housing demand over that 20 years. So that 1,750 new residents translates to 745 new housing units. So that will be spread between single family detached, townhomes, plexes, multifamily, and manufactured homes. So right now, the way that we're projecting out demand is based on existing conditions in the city. So mostly single family detached will make up the majority of the demand, of about 500 units there. And then 80 or so townhomes, plexes, 30 or so multifamily units, and 141 manufactured homes. Again, this is baseline. This is where we can play around with the distribution of housing units, but this is our baseline forecast. Next slide.
I think that's it.
And that is it.
I don't know if you can, I'll read on the screen, but just so you know, townhomes and plexes include 2 to 4 units, so duplexes, triplexes, and quadplexes, and then multifamily starts at 5 units and up. In terms of how those numbers are broken down. Okay, I'm going to go through a bunch of maps here. We saw these last time, but we'll kind of revisit them again because we've done some refinements. So here's just development in the city of Winston. All the little shapes are building footprints, and you can see how development has really taken hold along the highway and definitely in the flatter parts of the city. In terms of the next three maps are going to look similar. This one is existing land uses, so what type of land use is on the ground right now, what type of residential or commercial or industrial. In a second, we'll look at the next map, which I believe is the comprehensive plan designations. And then the third map is the zoning designations. And there's very few differences, actually, between them. But about a third of the city is currently developed. And about two-thirds of the city is made up mostly, or by vacant land, and a lot of that is the safari and the tribal land. Next slide. So here's the comprehensive plan designations. Your yellows and oranges are your residential, red, commercial, and then you get into gray for industrial. These blue parcels are publicly owned parcels, and green is open land ag. That's an interesting designation.
Isn't it, though?
Yeah. Caused you some headaches, I'm sure. So you can see the patterns in the zoning are pretty much the same, with the commercial being mostly concentrated here, surrounded by mostly residential. So in terms of land base, we mentioned this, about 1,300 acres are developed and about the same amount is vacant. So a pretty equal balance there. Next. In terms of ownership, a majority of the land is privately owned. That's, what, 1,500 acres, I think. Wildlife Safari, the Crow Creek Band of Umpqua Tribe, and then public and semi-public land. Next. Okay, so here's where we start to identify vacant land. And that is actually defined by statute in Oregon. It's a parcel is assumed vacant if it's at least 3,000 square feet and has a building value of less than $10,000. So basically parcels that are large enough for development and but the value of any structure that's on them is very low, right? So that would mean if it has a shed on it, it's probably considered undeveloped. But if a house is on it, it's considered developed. So as you would expect, it looks like, a lot of this vacant land is up in these areas. We'll go over why some of these gray areas are not included in a little bit later in the presentation. Next. So then we have what's called partially vacant land. And that's single family lots that are larger than a half acre are assumed partially vacant. So if there's a lot larger than a half acre, it probably has a house on it, but it's considered, the rest of the land is considered it's considered partially vacant because theoretically you could divide it and get another home on it.
So my property, which is in the city, is 9/10 of an acre. So that's going to be considered
partially vacant because there's the opportunity to divide it and put another home on it.
Gotcha.
And then there are other sites that might be available for further development but aren't currently used to their full potential. I can't remember, I asked our GIS specialist, I think some of these might be church sites, just other kind of miscellaneous sites. Obviously here's the safari, because the current zoning does allow limited residential development. That's why that showed up here. Next slide. There's also something called redevelopment potential. That's land that is developed, but where the sites have a lower improvement value than land value. So actually, the land is worth more than the structures that are on it. That's considered a redevelopable land, a redevelopable property. And you can see there's not a whole lot of that. They're kind of scattered here and there throughout. Next slide. So combined, at least initially, this looks like the city's got a whole lot of vacant land, right? 1,300 acres, 270 acres, 370 acres. So that seems like a lot, but next we'll go into why that's not the case, the constraining factors. So a lot of land, basically because of environmental constraints and some others, land gets taken out. So the first is public land. So here we have the tribe-owned land in particular. That's all taken out. Public land is removed. Parks, public facilities, and sites zoned as public reserves in the comp plan are all removed from the inventory. And then sometimes unimproved semi-public land can be removed as well. Open water, which I think for Winston is really just the rivers here. I don't think there's any other open water inside city limits. So that's removed. Flooding. There's two things. There's flood plains and floodways. And flood plains are removed from the inventory. So that's all the darker purple that you see here is all removed from the inventory.
So floodways are not removed, just the flood.
Tim, do you remember? That's my understanding.
Yes.
Okay.
Floodway, because floodways you can still develop in, even if it's limited.
But it's the other way around.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
The floodway is the more restrictive.
Okay.
Zone.
Thank you. I can never get that right. Here's a big one for Winston, obviously, steep slopes. So, according to Oregon statutes, you have to have a slope of 25% or greater to take it out of the inventory, which can be challenging because it's very hard to build on slopes between 10 and 25% grade, but the law only allows us to remove the 25%. So you see a little bit here, but a whole lot on the tribe land and in the safari area. Next. So if you look at it all together after we saw the vacant land before, now you look at this map of everything that's constrained, suddenly it makes sense that there's not quite as much vacant land available as you might have thought. So we get to the buildable land supply. And so there's a few slides here, so bear with me. So this is just the initial look at buildable land. We've got, gosh, some of these colors are really hard to distinguish here. You know, almost 700, 200, you know, almost 1,000 or around 1,000 acres based on those different categories of vacant, partially vacant, et cetera. Then we go to the next slide. Oh, this is just showing the vacant land by zone, or the buildable land by zone. But if we go to the third slide, which I had my GIS person to create today, now this is the accurate representation of the actual buildable land. So you see the tribal land isn't in there. Most, if not all, of the safari isn't in there. We'll have to change with the new news that you shared if we have any of that safari land in there. But now you see that there's really not as much land in the inventory as it appeared earlier. So we've got, in terms of zones, we've got 278 acres of low density, 361 acres of medium density, and I think that says 65 acres of high density land available, buildable for development. So before we get there, Tim, so earlier Tim was kind of breaking down the land need by housing type. And so now you see we also have buildable land by zone. So we can kind of match those up and figure out not only how much land do we have of a deficit of, or a surplus, but if it's a deficit, what type of zoned land do we need? Do we need more low, medium, or high density zoned land?
As I was understanding it, we're looking at on our housing needs over the next 20 years was like 745
units.
Which breaks down to like 37-ish units a year.
Oh, yeah, that's one way to look at it, yeah.
So I'm just kind of curious about that and how that's all going to play in that.
In terms of like how do you get 37 units built a year? Or
where you put 37 units a year.
Well, I mean, I don't want to spoil everything and spoil Tim's part of the presentation, but you're about to find out that the city has a surplus of land, which I think we talked to Thomas and we suspected coming into this. But I'll let Tim give that part of the presentation.
All right. So I'll answer that question. It's a sign of a good question if it's spoiling my part of the presentation. So this is just a repeat of the table that we were looking at the end of my last portion of presentation. So again, we're looking at 745 units. And as Steve said, we divided it by type. So you got your 500 single family. So that would be the lower density. Your medium density is probably townhomes, plexes, and manufactured housing units, and then multifamily. That'll round out the higher density land use type. So keep this in mind as we go through the next few slides of this. So next slide here. So I know that this is a lot to take in at this table, so we'll go slowly. These categories here on the far left should look familiar. This is the breakdown from before, so single family, townhomes, plexes, manufactured, multifamily, and then we talk about group quarters just a little bit here. And these are the same demand numbers that we were looking at before. So 500 single family detached, 80 townhomes, plexes, 141 manufactured, and 33 multifamily. This is where we get into the reconciliation of the land and the demand. So based on the land use types, so these are our best estimates of where these types of units will be based on their zoning. So your lower density residential types, your lower density zones, I should say, will play host to the single family detached. Your slightly higher density zones.
That's units per acre there, Tim?
Yes, we'll get to that a little bit more over here.
Sorry, I just see the parentheses.
Yeah, I think that's a R7, but I don't know.
That correlates with the comprehensive plan, and it does mean dwelling units per acre.
Great.
Yeah.
So that is a slight, so as it's a 7 instead of a 3 or a 4.5, this is your higher density residential category, or I guess I should say medium residential category. Manufactured homes probably be spread out among the different land use types, which makes it a little bit difficult. And then Among multifamily, you're going to have your higher density, so you're 16 units per acre there. And this just goes through and names those zones a little bit more. We see the allowable densities here. So you're seeing, again, these are lower, this is medium, more medium, and higher density there. We're putting average development here based on the allowable densities. So this is our, this is a really important number here. So basically we're assuming 4 units per acre for single family detached zone types, 7 for townhomes, 10 for manufactured homes, 18 for multifamily. And so here at the far right, we're seeing the number of acres that it will need to address the demand for single family detached. So 122 acres of lower density residential land for single family detached, 12 acres for townhomes and plexes, 14 for manufactured homes, and 2 acres for multifamily, along with 1, we guess, for a group quarters population, for a total demand of 151 acres, which, if you're taking notes at home, that's less than the buildable land inventory that we've calculated.
That's the next slide.
Right. Oh, geez, I'm ruining my own presentation here. So this is another process that we have to put these things through. So unconstrained vacant land, that's what we were looking at earlier in the buildable land inventory. And we add in the part vacant and the redevelopment opportunities. So we end up with a total estimated residential buildable land inventory of about 504 acres. We subtract from that public facilities allowances, so think schools, parks, the kinds of things that will be necessary to host residential developments, you know, utilities as well.
Roads. The main one.
That's probably the main one, huh? And so we end up with...
So that's a 25%. It's not, we don't know how much land, so the state allows you to do a rule of thumb, subtract 25% for infrastructure.
Right. Yes. Well put. So we end up with, in these categories, about 378 acres of buildable land, which we'll go, I guess, to the next slide and see if that will be adequate.
Sorry.
No worries. And so here you see a lot of the same elements, the same categories, sort of the same categorizations. And again, the demand that we talked about before for the 20 years of residential growth, juxtaposed with that net buildable land figure. And this here at the far right again is your net surplus or deficit, but we don't have any deficits in these categories. So you see you're gonna end up with 86 acres remaining for the single family detached categories, 109 for the townhomes and plexes, and 32 for the multifamily, for a total surplus of 227 acres. So far we're showing that there is adequate land in Winston to meet 20-year residential growth figures.
I want to make it clear, too, that these are the preliminary numbers. If, you know, we'll send out the PowerPoint to everyone, and if you're going through the maps and things just aren't making sense, because sometimes the data that we get just is off in certain ways, so we want to make sure that as you go through the buildable lands inventory that we're getting everything right. You know, you might say, that's developed and it's showing up as vacant. We can look into that. And I think we did some preliminary screening, but we'll want you all to take a second look. But preliminarily, it looks like the city has plenty of land to accommodate the need that was identified.
So question, yeah. You said the state allows you to eliminate land that's on 25%
Slope. Oh yes, 25% and above.
But anything above 10% is tough to build on.
Very true. I wish there was something we could do about that.
So I know for a lot of this, some of this land is above 10% slope.
Can you go back to the slopes?
Oh yeah.
Actually, go to the last map. Sorry. Is that the last one? Yeah. Sorry. No, I'm sorry. Go back to the slopes. Yeah, so, oh, you were there.
There you go.
So technically, all of the stuff, unless there's just, like, right here, we would have, if this wasn't tribe land, we would have taken this out. I think my GIS person said if 85% of the land in an area is 25% slope, then you take out the part that's less. But I think this land would have been in the inventory if not for us taking out the safari. That's correct. We wish there was a way that the state would allow us to assume a lower level of development in those areas. So if you could have 10 units per acre, let's assume in slopes between 10 and 25% that we can only get 5 units per acre. But that's not something that they allow us to do. And I should say, the housing needs analysis, because it is so regulated by state law, our hands are tied in a lot of things. But what this, and it really is an exercise in land. Do you have enough land to satisfy this need? But hopefully what some of the information that Tim presented last time and this time does is helps inform a broader conversation about housing and housing affordability. I mean, because the land is one piece, but like, how are you going to get the houses built that you need to get built? I mean, I think that's a real challenge, and the state's starting to put more resources towards that. There's something called a housing production strategy. It's a new tool that they're requiring larger cities. I don't think Winston would be required to do one, but it's something that you could look into, where cities identify the tools, whether it's incentive, well, Tim can probably speak to it better, but whether it's changing zoning code or providing financial incentives or removing barriers, what are the tools that the city is going to contribute to helping see that the needed housing units get built? Because again, the housing needs analysis is all about making sure the city has enough land to build the housing. It's not, there's nothing in the housing needs analysis that says how are we going to actually get this housing built.
Right. But it tells us, being on the Planning Commission, it gives us the information we need to create the paperwork to get the production done.
Yeah, I mean, knowledge, that's important information to have, to know, do we have a surplus or a deficit? Oh, we have a surplus. So it's not about land. Now it's about what can we do to encourage developers or to build the housing that we need.
Yeah, Commissioner Hobson's correct. We do have further constraints that may not be captured with the HNA, regardless of how the HNA is supposed to be facilitated. And we've seen it everywhere as it relates to water or sewer or incline for streets. Once you get up into the 12 range, nobody really wants to do much of anything, including the jurisdiction. Just water alone, you can't do normal pressure or anything. You got to essentially put in a reservoir or a big tank, which becomes too financially cumbersome. So one of the things that we look at is it's not out of bounds for us to use our other tools to take out further constrained areas, like the urban growth boundary swap or like, you know, other tools that we might have, resources. So, however, the base need for this analysis, regardless if it shows a surplus, it was severely outdated, and we needed at least an accurate reflection on what's going on. And we have more of it now than we have had in a lot of years.
Yeah. So it's really important information. I mean, and when we get when we work on the final housing needs analysis, yeah, you'll really see, and we can stand around some of these boards a little bit later, but at what income levels is housing needed as well? I mean, Tim showed 25% of the residents of this city are paying 50% or more of their salary on housing. That's important information to know. That's like, yeah, we do need more housing. You know, I assume Winston needs housing for the full spectrum of incomes, right? For people on the high end, but also for people on the low end.
I suspect that 25% is a lot higher today than it was in 2019.
That's very possible. Yeah, it's very possible.
Also, the state says that anything over half an acre is not fully developed if you only have one house.
Correct.
So if we have lots that are bigger than half an acre and only one house on it, that means that it's included in the
inventory. But only like half of the acreage.
Right. Half of the acreage.
Yeah.
But
yes, that's
but
included.
If it's under one ownership.
I mean, that's the thing, because the city says, you don't know, I don't know, none of us knows what's going to happen in 20 years from now, so we can't assume. You know, lots of times people say to the state, but we know these owners, they're not going to sell whatever it is, and they're not going to change that
house on the other half.
Yeah, and the state says 20 years, a lot can change in 20 years. You don't know.
I pass away and my son take over the land and decide to divide it all up. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's why they do it the way they do. Sometimes it's going to be right and sometimes it's going to be wrong, but that's the tool that they have. But, you know, there's a pretty significant surplus, so it's not like we're, you know, there's not a fine line here. Where if the city really wanted to do an urban growth boundary expansion and it was really close within 10 acres, we could like zoom in another level on this data and get really picky about every single parcel and maybe get you your 10 acres, right, to get your expansion. But when the surplus is 200 some acres, that's just not the case.
There's a precedent here that's happened throughout the city of Winston's history. There were areas that were brought in with a specific vision, and those visions didn't come to fruition. And Rex can tell you way better than me. He's got a very rich understanding of the history of being a past mayor and seeing those things come across the dais. But the southwest area of the city alone, that's 181 of those.
Can you go to that last map again?
The southwest area alone,
this area?
The 181 acres, makes up 181 or 182 acres of that 227 additional acre, the surplus. And we just now, after more than 20 years, have a viable builder, the same owner that owns 10 down, and he's coming forward with potential plans for it. But there's been a history here where, and the reason I'm saying that is because if you understand the history, then you see the reason why we have such a robust surplus. So the data was still important, so now what do we do with the surplus? Well, this opens the door to figure out exactly how to utilize going forward in better capacity.
Try to get this developed, right? I mean, that's, yeah, I think, go ahead.
Well, that particular piece of property was going to be a planned unit development.
Right.
And within that, there was all different kinds of zoning from high density to low density to commercial to a lot of different things. So I'm hoping that you pull the commercial portions out of that 181 acres or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Because that was something that in order to put that PUC in, they had to put so much commercial property in it to take care of the residents.
So this shows the zoning. You've got that open land, ag. This looks like the commercial. There's commercial here. Looks like commercial here as well. Yeah. Now, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Thomas, does your commercial zone allow for some level of residential development?
Not. So the only time you can do that is if it's above a commercial structure.
Okay.
And so, it's going to be one dwelling per commercial operation.
Per commercial operation. So as that last map showed, we pulled it all out. DLCD could maybe make an argument. They usually try to make you do some formula that's less than full development for mixed-use areas or commercial areas that allow residential. But for now, we pulled it all out because we don't think that's very realistic.
I have one other question. Thomas maybe can answer this. So the land right across from me, across the road, that can't be fully developed because of is it a flood plain or just a flood area where you can't develop the whole property?
Where are we talking?
Right off Looking across the road from me on Looking Glass. He's got a house. He's building another one, but he's got a whole other acreage there, or probably another.
Oh, you're talking, so there's some wetland issues there.
Wetland, that's what I'm thinking. How much more wetlands do we have other than that?
The wetland areas were taken out. The constraints around that were...
I don't think, so the tricky thing with wetlands is that...
They have to be delineated.
They have to be, they have to be protected within your comp plan.
Right.
Are they part of the constraint then?
I don't know if they were. I mean, do you have something? We talked about this.
We have a local wetland inventory, but it's really old. So, that's the thing on it. The wetlands there on that property have been delineated, right. And he's building another house, but he's out of the wetland.
Yes, Misty, I know, but he's got two.
I'm with the the Department of Interior, the wetland that is at Looking Glass, that grant expired in 2013. It was never renewed. So they built the Meadow Creek Phase 1, and they're working on the one behind it now. But that wetland was never renewed.
So
from
I think
Looking Glass to Brockway.
Okay, so I think where we're talking about is right against Looking Glass,
right
down
on
the street.
Itself.
There's a lot there, and it's on the corner of Looking Glass and Brockway.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the gentleman that owns that, he just recently, about 6 months ago or so, he got a new wetland delineation from Lauren Waldron.
Right. He did.
So that's the one, but just to the north of there in Safari Estates, yeah, their delineation has been expired, and they're only good for 5 years.
Right, and nobody's renewed it.
You can only renew within the first 6 months. Other than that, you have to get a brand new one.
Been a long time, 2013.
Yeah. Yep, and if they want to do anything like that, if they're going to work in wetlands, they're going to have to turn in something
right.
like that. Absolutely.
So, Thomas, right now I don't think wetlands are taken out because you do have to have something in the comp plan that protects them. So this is an example of if you think we don't have that right, then that's something we should talk about, and maybe we can...
Our zoning ordinance defers to the state requirements. There are no specific language protections in there. Now, if you have a LWI, by default, you are protecting those areas that have been adopted in your LWI. But like I said, ours is very old.
Right. I'll check with Yuli on that and see.
Okay. The areas that are on there are pretty minimal. They're mostly north of Looking Glass up in that Safari Estates area.
She's the one. She's been kind of diving deep into the... Because there's different ways to do these inventories, and she's been making sure that in the case... That she's doing it by state statute in the case that if any of our client cities that we're working with right now does want an urban growth boundary... There's specific statutes around how you need to do it for an urban growth boundary as well. So she'll know all the definitions and stuff. So I'll check with her. I don't know if it's hard to see up here. We can certainly walk over to the boards. I think I had a couple more slides. If there's no more questions, but we can keep talking too. It's just the schedule again, which we already talked about. Yeah, happy to answer more questions or stand around the boards over here. I know that this is a little blurry. I apologize for that. Maybe I need some glasses. Maybe that's the problem. Any questions?
Do you guys have any more questions here? How about from the audience? Any questions?
Is there plenty of water come midsummer?
Plenty of water?
Yeah.
He's new.
Maybe this summer might be. Sometimes there isn't. A lot more rain right now than music yet.
We haven't had to put any kind of building moratoriums because of lack of water. We've always been able to accomplish what we needed throughout the city's history.
Well, where we came from in Sonora, California, they put tanks on top of hills. That's how they did it. And we paid, $120 for 2 months worth of water.
Not in Winston yet.
No.
No.
Who knows? But not yet.
Winston Dillard Water is indicating that they're pretty flush with good pressure all around, and hasn't seemed to be a problem.
They've never, as far as I know, they've never put a restriction on watering lawns or anything.
No. 5 years.
You moved to an oasis.
Basically.
Yeah.
Basically.
I've lived here 30 years, and I don't remember ever there being a restriction on anything like that.
I've watered my lawn every year. I kept thinking maybe a year or two ago that they were going to put a restriction on, but they never did. So.
I'm still conserving.
Yeah.
Just getting that mindset conserving. Mm-hmm. And I do know that last year the Corps of Engineers was behind my house, and the Public Works did put in larger culverts. There's three of them back in there.
Are you up down on Teresa?
Yes.
Okay.
And they've been very good about, well, I pulled balls out of there, McDonald's stuff out of there, those culverts. It's all coming from Looking Glass.
Yeah, there's a wonderful tributary back there, isn't there?
And yes.
We just cannot touch it because Corps of Engineers would just go crazy over what we did. But it's down in Creekside Meadows subdivision down there off Collins, and then you turn down Teresa.
Yeah.
There's it's just behind Looking Glass Creek Estates Phase 3.
Mm-hmm.
And we did clear out as much of those culverts as we can. They seem to be running smooth.
And they're running good now. They've widened the ditch probably another 5 feet.
Uh-huh.
And it has really helped.
Oh, yeah. It's looking good for the foreseeable future. Yeah. Our public works people do a good job.
Yes, they
here.
Do.
They care a lot.
She was out there. I took my moving. I lost 5 feet off of my lawn. And when they dug that out, they gave it back to me. No questions asked. You can dump it wherever you want.
Yeah.
Well, that's it for our presentation.
Very
what is the light color on the wheel? What is, I can't read the...
Sorry, this one?
That one there, yes.
This is residential, 3 dwelling units per acre. So usually the lighter, in the yellows and oranges, the lighter the color, the lower the density. So
that's
as you move up, you know, you get from 3 units to 4.5 to 7 to 16 in the brown. So these are all the residential right here. And then you've got the purple is historic commercial. The brown is highway commercial. The red is general commercial. And the green is this open land slash agriculture zone that you see a lot up in the safari, as well as down in this planned unit development area. So the next time that we come back, or the next time we visit with you, so as I mentioned, if there was a deficit, we would start working with you to identify ways that you could make changes inside the urban growth boundary to accommodate more housing. That's not a step we need to take. So the next step for us is to pull everything together into one document, the housing needs analysis document. And we could talk about, we should look at our budget, but if there's anything else that we can do, Thomas, in terms of like maybe looking at your housing policies and your comp plan and giving some suggestions, for updates, things like that, that we can do with surplus budget, we'd be happy to do that.
Yeah, well, obviously the entirety of that element is as antiquated as it can be. What we're going to be tackling next is the EOA, the Economic Opportunities Analysis. That's the next thing in line. What we've done here is focus on the residential needs. The EOA focuses on the commercial and industrial in the same fashion.
Yep.
So the economic opportunities analysis is the HNA for commercial and industrial type.
They're pretty hand in hand, the residential and the commercial.
Yeah, so while we're in there, just looking at the HNA, we need to update and turn over as much as we can. So yeah, anything that you're willing to look at and offer suggestions on would be awesome. In case you're in the car for another 3 hours or whatnot, maybe talk on it and let us know.
I think what we'll need to do is talk with the DLCD reps and just make sure, like, let's us decide what makes sense, and then we'll talk to them and get their stamp of approval.
Yep, got to get that approval.
Yes, or else they don't pay us.
That's
they
right.
don't approve your documents.
All right, is there anything else you need me to do, Thomas?
I think we're in a good place, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Well then, any other questions from anyone?
No, I'm good.
Right. Well then, I guess we will close out the meeting then. Then it's 6 p.m.
Thank you.
Meeting adjourned, 6 p.m.